What percentage of the dam is actually done at this time?
By dollar value, we're approximately 60% done on the dam. And we really break the dam up into two distinct features of work. There's a tainter gate section of the dam that really is a structure to help control pool elevation. Of that feature, we've got 17 out of the 18 concrete shells in the water currently. And we're just kicking off the work in the navigable pass section of the dam, which is a section that is composed of wicket gates that actually raise and lower from the bottom of the river. So during high river conditions, traffic can pass. So we're going to kick that work off this year.
How long do you expect that part to take?
When we got into this construction method, there was a ramp-up time to build the infrastructure to support it, and that took place from about 2005 to 2009. So since 2010, we've been out in the river actually doing the permanent construction work. So we've got about four seasons under our belt. Currently, counting 2014, we expect it's going to take about five more of these construction low-water seasons to complete the dam to an operational state.
Well, you brought it up, this in-the-wet methodology. Tell about what technical innovations had to occur to let you pursue this way of building the dam.
Really, the main one is, and we use the imagery sometimes, I caution to use it because it oversimplifies it, but, you know, we all played with Legos as a child. And so really, this construction method is building large concrete shells up on the bank. And then we had to develop the infrastructure to deliver those out to the exact precise location in the river that we wanted. And so really some of the innovation is the lifting mechanisms to pick up those shells. We had to design and fabricate one-of-a-kind pieces of equipment. We have something called a super gantry crane that is actually up on the bank. It goes over our precast yard, and we build these 5,000-ton concrete shells. And then it picks it up using a system of cables called strand jacks. Picks it up very securely so you don't accidentally drop it, then slowly moves it down to a diagonal element called our cradle transport system, and that diagonally takes it down the bank into the water. And at that point in time, we have another crane that's a catamaran barge that then picks up the shell and designed by a naval architect, and it carries it out to the exact location in the river to set it down. Now, all of these things are monumental pieces of equipment. For safety and security, they move very slowly. But they're all one of a kind. There's no other equipment like this in the world.
So once it gets out there, human beings have to attach these massive structures to foundations that are prefabricated at the bottom of the river?
It's an exercise in gravity. We drive round foundation pile in the bottom of the river, and certain pile are designated as the connection point with the shells. And these shells have instrumentation on them so that when we lower them down in the river, we know exactly where they're landing on these connection points. Before we lower it down, we put divers down in the water, and they have to check the foundation to make sure it's within tolerance. Then we set the shells, and then divers go back down for quality control purposes and make sure that the shells are in the proper location. And they have to do some production prep activity before we then fill that shell with concrete.
Have you talked with divers about what it's like condition-wise down in the Ohio River doing that?
We have dive inspectors topside. They don't go down in the water because that's a contracted activity. But we also have Army divers who come in and do some maintenance work for us. So we have a very good idea of what it's like. Zero visibility. It's very difficult working conditions. 99% of the stimulus they receive is by touch. So they're feeling around. We brief them before they go down to what to expect, what to feel for. We give them some gauges to take down with them. So if they're checking a width tolerance, they can insert the gauge to get an idea of how close the features are to each other. It's very difficult working conditions. And to date, we've safely performed 5,000 dives in support of this construction method.
Tell me about the curtain that you made to offset the current effect on the divers.
When we dive, the two things that really dictate those conditions are the elevation of the river, how deep it is, and then the velocity of the current. Typically, we try to keep our divers under 3 feet per second because it just at that point, the velocity of the river is pushing them downstream too much that they can't get any work done and it's not a safe environment. So what we did is, several times a year, we'll run up into a situation where we're right on that cutting edge. It's maybe slightly over 3 feet per second. So we had our engineers design what we call the chain curtain. It looks like the skeleton of a giant ship's sail. So we have a large crane that goes upstream of where the divers are going, and they lower this shell, this ship's sail into the river, and it really, it's like a filter that slows the water down. It's made up with heavy chain, and it can usually cut about a half a foot per second of velocity routinely off what the divers are seeing. And sometimes that's the difference between us really getting achieving one of our goals and, or not. So it's very interesting piece of engineering.
This may sound silly, but when you were growing up, did you envision yourself doing this kind of work?
I did not, but I can tell you it's the best job I've ever had. I love this. The project every day brings a new challenge. The achievements when we accomplish our milestones get a real sense of euphoria, so it's a wonderful project to work on.
About how many people are currently employed working on the dam?
During our construction season, which normally our low water season runs from about June 15th through November 30th, we'll have about 550 craft workers and engineers on site directly working on the project. Now, if you look at everyone who touches the project, including manufacturers and fabricators and remote design firms, that number probably is actually 10 times that amount that actually have touched the project in some manner.
And now we get to the big question, and that's, what's the current status of funding?
Kind of going back to the last fall, funding, at least in the recent time frame, hadn't been an issue. The issue for us last fall was the authorization piece of it, because we were approaching exceeding our authorization limit. So with the continuing resolution last October, that increased our authorization to match with our forecasted estimates to complete the project. But the appropriation side, we've been receiving a very steady, efficient flow of funding to the project. Our appropriation for FY14 was what we requested. 15 were in the president's budget for the amount we requested. So funding does not seem to be an issue at this point in time.
That being said, reiterate the current projected date of completion.
What we said in our authorization document was that the dam would be operational by 2020 and the project complete by 2024. That's because after the dam goes into operations, we still have some contracts to go back to do the demolition of Lock and Dam 52, the demolition of Lock and Dam 53. And then once Olmsted's actually in operation, we've got some significant rock dikes that we'll probably install to help with the navigation through the project. What I can tell you is that those dates of dam operational 2020 and project complete 2024, that we are on or ahead of those scheduled dates.
And 52 and 53 are going to hold up until this dam is ready for it?
But they have to. They don't have any choice. And I work very closely with my operations counterpart here in the district office, and they are robustly monitoring to make sure that we can keep those projects reliable until we get Olmsted project in operation. Certainly, you know, the way we categorize both of those projects at this point in time is they're decades beyond their design service life, so we do categorize them as failing projects, but we do believe we can keep them operational until Olmsted comes online.
Now, I understand this in-the-wet technology is known in Europe, but is this project a one-of-a-kind in the U.S.?
On this scale, it certainly is. There was one other core project on a much, much smaller scale that used some attributes of in-the-wet precasting elements on land and then transporting them in the river, but it was much smaller scale and a much, much smaller tributary. Typically, this construction method in Europe is used in a tidal location in which you have a much more predictable water elevation. The tide comes in, the tide goes out, and it's predictable on a day-to-day basis. At Olmsted, in that stretch of the Ohio River, the elevation can change as much as 20 feet in a day. And so it becomes very difficult in staging your resources to make sure everybody's safe in the right location to accomplish production work when you're experiencing some of those fluctuations. Now, we've gotten very good at forecasting and seeing what our capabilities are in different windows, but it's unprecedented as far as I can tell on this scale.
Mike, thanks an awful lot for taking the time to speak with me today.
Oh, no problem at all. Thank you.